Turns out St. Joseph has a lot to teach modern people. Joe Heschmeyer is next. Hello and welcome to Focus, the Catholic Answers podcast for living, understanding, and defending your Catholic faith. I'm Cy Kellett, your host, and please raise your hand if the following applies to you. You didn't really do much to observe the year of St. Joseph. Raise your hand. I knew it. I knew there were a lot of you out there. Yeah, there was a wonderful year of St. Joseph given to us by Pope Francis. And boy, do we need some fatherly and motherly help in the world today. If we can get that from the heavenly realms, that is just what we need. And yet, many of us didn't do much for the year of St. Joseph, didn't pay that much attention to St. Joseph. Maybe you did. If you did, congratulations. I kind of feel like we didn't do enough here at Catholic Answers to honor St. Joseph, to remember him, and to ask for his help and his blessing. So today, the day that this podcast comes out, December 8th, 2021, is the last day of the year of St. Joseph. So we're going to make up for lost time, talk with Joseph Heschmeyer about a man named Joseph, guardian for our times. Here's what Joe Heschmeyer had to say. Joe Heschmeyer, apologist extraordinaire and the author of the brand new book, The Early Church Was the Catholic Church. Thanks for being with us for this conversation about St. Joseph.
My pleasure. Another book I wrote, A Man Named Joseph.
Guardian for Our Times.
About St. Joseph. Yes.
Yeah, I was going to mention it, Joe. Have you lost complete trust in me as a host? Like, I better just say some stuff because he's not going to think of any of this.
I trust anyone who's a regular listener to this show, Catholic Answers Live, knows what an appropriate answer to that question is.
Oh, you have lost trust in me. Oh, that hurts my feeling. All right, Joe, we'll talk about St. Joseph, but before we do, one thing we should say is this goes to air on December 8th. December 8th is the Feast of the Immaculate Conception, which is a Marian feast. So I don't want to not wish everyone a blessed Feast of the Immaculate Conception. And remember our Mother in Heaven, our Heavenly Mother, the Mother of God, the Queen of Heaven. Do you know her name, Joe?
Mary.
Mary, you got it. I'm so glad. If you had gotten that one wrong, that would have really brought the rest of the show down.
So I wrote a book about Joseph.
spouse of the Blessed Virgin, Joseph.
Yes.
And part of the reason we chose to do this on a Marian feast is that actually Pope Francis gave us a year of St. Joseph, which ends today on December 8th, the Feast of the Immaculate Conception.
Yeah, this episode could just be like why you missed the year of St. Joseph or what you missed during the year of St. Joseph. For anyone who's tuning in the very last day, or potentially too late, here's what you could have experienced all year long.
Yeah, but you know, there's a great Catholic tradition of showing up late and as a matter of fact, I believe Jesus has a thing about you can get paid for the whole day even if you just work the last hour. So,
well, in keeping with the nativity theme, it's worth remembering that by the time the wise men get there, we're not told how old Jesus is, but we know Herod is looking for children aged 2 and under, which suggests they may not have been extremely timely to his birthday party.
That's right. So now you're comparing us to the Magi. Okay, fair enough. I'll accept that comparison.
We're offering our gifts to the Lord.
All right. Before we continue, then, if you would please sing several verses of The Little Drummer Boy.
I'm afraid I'm going to have to pass on that one. I think we can splice in someone much better than me singing that.
Here's a weird thing about your book, Guardian for Our Times. That's how you describe Joseph. What does St. Joseph have to do with our times?
Yeah. So can I put that in like a very brief 2000-year kind of span and to say like most of the church's history, Joseph was basically ignored?
Yeah, really, he's kind of a Catholic Reformation discovery, huh?
Well, it's a little older than that, but not a lot older than that. Really, around 1300, there's a renewed interest in him. He's added to the Universal Liturgical Calendar in 1479. But until about 1300, there are zero churches in the world
named
after him.
Ah.
Yeah.
The great saints of the early church were John the Baptist, the Virgin Mary, and the apostles.
And then the martyrs.
And then the martyrs.
So especially at a time when you have people getting martyred in the community, I mean, one of the things we don't think about, because for us, the saints are always really long ago. But if you think about the saints in the Roman canon, when you've got Linus, Cletus, Clement, Sixtus, Cornelius, Cyprian, Lawrence, Chrysogonus, John, Paul, Cosmas, Damian, these are either going to be early popes or martyrs from the community in Rome, or both. And so these were people who had led either by office or by example the community. And so someone like St. Joseph, as amazing as he is dead long before you start keeping track of the local Christian heroes. Like he's out of the picture by the time Jesus's public ministry begins. And so I think there's some sense in which he's almost overlooked for that reason. But then you also have really, especially in the East, with what's called the Proto-Evangelium of James, you have this extra-canonical literature that tries to fill in this 30-year gap and tries to recount stories from Jesus's childhood, or tries to recount stories from Mary's childhood, or the marriage of Mary and Joseph. These kind of stories are very popular among Christians. Now, they're folk stories, and you take them with a heavy grain of salt. But Joseph often doesn't come out looking particularly good in that, because to add a little bit of conflict, they think they kind of spice up the gospel accounts, where Joseph is a little cynical about the marriage and he's a little cynical about the virgin birth. And he just doesn't come off in a particularly saintly way. He comes off as a little embittered. And you can find this, unfortunately, even throughout a lot of the church's art, especially going back to like the Middle Ages. You'll often find these depictions of the nativity where you have Mary looking very happy and pious, and then Joseph looks like this grumpy old man in the corner who's kind of like frowning about the whole thing. Now, part of what's going on there is that they were trying to show the virgin birth without words. Like, as an artist, how do you depict that Joseph is not the biological father of Jesus? Well, one way, I would argue not a good way, is to show him like unhappy with the birth.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, so you disconnect him from the family picture that gives it a kind of visual clue of what you're trying to convey, which is he's not the biological dad.
Exactly. So they're trying to express this, and I think they're expressing it in a way that's poor. I think they're expressing it in a way that, I mean, for lack of a better way to describe it, they make it look like he's been cuckolded by God, which is not at all, like, that's not a good understanding of the virgin birth of Christ at all.
No.
Like, that totally misunderstands Joseph's role in the nativity. But that's an understanding that on a more or less conscious level, it seems like a lot of people in the church had up until about 1300. Now, there are exceptions to that, but you don't have huge devotion to Joseph in the church fathers. You don't have huge devotion to Joseph in the early Middle Ages.
So there is a kind of, though, something that happens over the course of the Middle Ages, though, where the spirituality turns more inward as the Middle Ages go on. So maybe the father figure of Joseph fit with the inward turn in the latter, in the High Middle Ages and Late Middle Ages.
Yeah, I think that's a good read. Like I said, you start to see the seeds of this around the 1300s. 1416, Jean Gerson, who was a theologian of the University of Paris, he was actually the chancellor, he gives a speech before the Council of Constance in which he argues that Joseph deserves a feast day, and the church has been like undervaluing him. But then he also does this really fascinating thing. He writes a 3,000 hexameter Latin poem about Joseph. It's called the Josephina. And so he's kind of angling in two directions. He's speaking to the council saying, you know, you guys can control the church calendar. You can put Joseph on there and really encourage kind of from a top-down perspective. But then he's writing a popular poem to encourage more of a grassroots devotion. And it works. Within a very short span of time, the church does respond and gives Joseph a feast day. And also we see a real groundswell of devotion to Joseph. One of Gerson's arguments is that Joseph isn't this kind of dried up old man, that he's actually a young, strong man who's been misunderstood by a lot of Catholics.
Okay, so then my question to you that to start all of this was why the phrase guardian for our time? And your point was actually our time, at least if you consider the last 700 years, this has really been Joseph's time, and he didn't have a time before that.
Yeah, he is now. So I wanted to kind of set all of that stage just to tee up the fact that when I say Joseph is now the second most cited saint after the Virgin Mary in papal magisterial documents, this is a radical sea change. That the church is constantly pointing us to Joseph now in a way that just wasn't true before. So we should be asking the question, like, what's different now? And I think you've already highlighted one of the things is there is a little more of an interior shift as we're no longer primarily in places in which we're being martyred. The things we're looking for in a saint may be different. And so a saint who is a father and a protector and all of that, especially in an era in which you have the breakdown of the family, seems incredibly timely. So then to get to the other, that's kind of the our time half of the answer, the guardian dimension, the first papal title, and the reason that the Immaculate Conception feast day is the one that Pope Francis chose, is that 151 years ago, St. Joseph was given his first title, which was patron of the universal church. And patron of the universal church, like, he is made the guardian or acknowledged as the guardian of the whole church for a pretty simple reason, that if you think about the church as Jesus the head and then the body of Christ, the church in union, you know, Ephesians 1, that at the time of the nativity or at the time of the incarnation, during those 9 months of Mary's pregnancy, the visible church is basically just Jesus the head and Mary the body. And then Joseph very quickly joins the ranks as a protector, that he's protecting them as they go from Nazareth to Bethlehem. He's protecting them on the flight into Egypt. And his role is more than that, but it is certainly inclusive of the fact that he has been entrusted by God to protect Mary and to protect Jesus. And that is something that if you have never chewed on that before, it's worth chewing on. St. John Chrysostom has a homily. He's, you know, one of the few to kind of point out St. Joseph's really important role in the early church. And one of the things he says is, you know, Joseph is told that Jesus is going to come and save the people from their sins. And then the next time the angel appears to him, he basically says, you need to save Jesus. Like, you need to bring the family into Egypt because Herod is coming to kill him. That he is tasked with saving the Savior. And what a remarkable sort of inversion and turn that is. Like, no one else in history really can claim that. I mean, Mary in one sense can. But, like, Joseph in this very special sense, in the flight into Egypt, is tasked with saving Jesus's life, which is mind-blowing. And so the idea that he is the guardian of the church flows from the fact that he protected the whole church in the little home in Nazareth. The very first manifestation of the visible church is right there.
If I may, it also seems to me that in the modern period, and the reason that I said the Catholic Reformation was you think of a saint like St. Teresa of Avila, who had a profound devotion to St. Joseph, the one that I think led to many other saints considering St. Joseph and many
St. Francis of Sales as well, another Reformation era saint.
But it also strikes me, Joe, that after the Italian Renaissance, the world of the Catholic world becomes and now has maintained for a long time extremely wealthy. Wealth, right? And that means leisure and division of labor and all that. Well, I want to get to the division of labor part. Joseph as a worker speaks to a certain status, a modern status that really didn't exist before the modern world. That is, the worker who is engaged in what can appear to be meaningless work. Like, you're not mending a fence or milking a cow, but you're making the part of a part, you know what I'm saying? And so that this tends to really wear on the soul, I think.
Yeah, there's a reason, you know, that Joseph the Worker is the church's kind of response to the communist feast of May Day.
Yeah.
Like, the communists declared May 1st as like a worker's holiday. And the church, not wanting to jump on the communist bandwagon, but still recognizing that workers deserve to be celebrated, said, well, here's basically what Christians have to offer. Like, we have a theology of work beginning in the Garden of Eden. But even before the fall, work is something good and dignified, but work, like everything else, is corrupted by the fall. Well, Joseph, in a beautiful way, really embodies that. And I think there's a great, it's really just two lines in parallel accounts in the Synoptic Gospels. When Jesus is in Nazareth, one account says, is this not the carpenter's son? And one account says, is this not the carpenter? That the people know him as those two things, the son of Joseph the carpenter and a carpenter in his own right. And contained in those two lines is a whole story left untold of Jesus learning carpentry from St. Joseph. So as radical as it is to save the Savior, you're also going to teach the one who is also the all-knowing God, teach him how to do woodwork. And if you think about the fact that Jesus would die for our sins on a wooden cross, there's something beautiful and profound in a way that Joseph wouldn't have even known, of teaching Jesus to hammer the nails into the wood, that, you know, he's learning, he has an incredible intimacy with the wood, with the nails, in this lead up to the cross. And he's learning that in a real way in the school of St. Joseph.
Beautiful, Joe. So if I may, I would say one of the marks of now the postmodern era, you know, and I really do think we're in a postmodern, the modern world doesn't exist anymore. The modern world had a kind of optimism and positive morality that, even though it's a diminishment from true Christian morality, is not the abasement and negativity that we have today. So I would argue that we're in a postmodern era. And one of the marks of the postmodern era is the triumph of the self and the opinion. Opinion holds a place in our point of view, or my truth, or however you want to say that, holds a place of ascendancy that it has never held before in human history. And that the more intricate our gadgets get at communicating, the more we are devoted to what's sometimes called self-expression, but even news channels, as we know, are opinion channels now. What matters is not facts or reality as much as opinion. And it strikes me, and I've written a little bit about this, but I wanted to run my idea by you, that Joseph is everything except a man of opinions. He's everything that you know, he's truly and fully manly in every good sense of that, but he never utters an opinion once.
Yeah, there's a shirt, I think, that I saw, and it just is empty quotation marks, and then underneath it says St. Joseph. And the joke there, of course, is that there's zero recorded words from St. Joseph. We have one word we know he said. Do you know what that is?
What's
the word you're supposed to guess if you don't know the answer?
Yes.
Jesus.
Oh, Jesus. Oh. All right.
Were you never in Sunday school, Si? So we know he said.
I don't know. Yes, I was, but I don't remember that lesson. I'm sorry, Joe.
I just mean, like, whenever you grow up kids, if they don't know, they always just guess Jesus, and half the time it's right.
Yeah.
The angel tells him that he's going to name the child Jesus. Oh. So we know at some point he must have said the word Jesus.
Joe, but you are so good. Yeah.
That's all we have. So he has this incredibly referential sort of life, meaning, like, just like you don't understand who Mary is unless you understand who Jesus is, you don't understand anything about St. Joseph except in relation to Jesus and Mary. Everything we know about his life is in relation to one or both of them. And there's something really beautiful and really profound about that. Even, you know, he's not defined by his work. And that's one of the ways that we can easily allow ourselves to be defined. He is a worker. He's Joseph the carpenter. But no one remembers him primarily for his carpentry, right? It's for his family life, for these relations. And I think that's actually something as men we can easily slip into, is allowing ourselves to be defined by work, or to view that as where our success and importance lies.
Right.
And Joseph has this incredibly relational life. Case in point, twice in his life, he has to just totally nuke his own job and up and leave without any notice to his clients. I mean, we have no idea like what he was in the middle of project-wise. But, you know, as a carpenter, you're regularly working on something for someone, often someone who like either has paid you or at least is expecting you to produce something. And then Joseph just disappears. He skips town. He goes to Egypt with his family.
Yeah.
And he may well have left some annoyed clients or people saying, you know, he said he was going to be back after the census. Where is he? He never returns. But then after Herod dies, he does it again. He leaves Egypt.
Right.
Now, again, we have to fill in a little bit of story. We aren't told how long they're in Egypt. But as Pope Francis points out in Patris Cordae, the document that he released for the year of St. Joseph, that the family needed to eat. It didn't like they just have like a huge, you know, reserve sum of money. Now, sure, they got gold, frankincense, and myrrh from the Magi, but they can't just live off of life savings. They're going to have to actually, he's going to have to get a job and build a clientele, presumably in carpentry, somewhere in Egypt, in a totally new culture, and then do it all over again. So we see someone who's willing to put his job on hold and totally shutter his own business multiple times for the good of his family. And that's a huge sacrifice as a breadwinner, as a father, and as someone who can easily imagine that the way you serve your family best is by working, which is sometimes true, but not always. It's not it's easy to slip into that trap.
It's funny to think that somewhere in Bethlehem, in a basement or something, there's a half finished amoir somewhere that
yes,
Joseph was working on that, but. Yeah, but this is the thing, I think, Joe, that St. Joseph, his silence and his kind of fortitude, even waiting after death for 1,400 years before people started to pay any attention to him, I think it's helpful to us Christians now to kind of, like, it's very hard for a Christian to know how to respond to postmodernity. It's very hard to know because we never have dealt with a civilizational catastrophe ever in the history of the church that's like this one. This one's not analogous to any of the others. So part of the – if we listen to St. Joseph, if we take him as a guardian for our times, then part of the answer is – it's Jesus, Jesus, Jesus. I mean, stop trying to, you know, you don't have the answer to what's coming in a year, never mind, you know, where the church is going to be in 100 years. Make it all about Jesus, and that's your job, and don't worry about the rest.
Yeah, and in the scheme of things, as we look back, we can even see the providential design in allowing Joseph to be overlooked, meaning in the very early days of Christianity, it would be easy for the mistake to creep in that Joseph was Jesus's biological father. And so one of the ways, like his silence, his being overlooked, helped to preserve the doctrine of the virgin birth.
Right.
And then once that's firmly in place, it's like now we're ready to understand who Joseph is now that we've seen who he isn't. He isn't the biological father of Jesus, but he is called the father of Jesus in Luke chapter 2. So there's a sense in which he has a real adoptive fatherhood of Jesus, which is a remarkable and overlooked thing. Where, you know, we're always quick to say the foster father, the stepfather, but it's like, yeah, but he's also the father.
Yeah.
And if we miss that, so he takes the lowest place, even seemingly in some way relationally, he allows himself to be overlooked. And then we can kind of see the brilliance in the role shine forth. I begin the book by looking at Jesus' parable in Luke 14, when he talks about a marriage feast. And he says to go to the lowest place so that you can be told, friend, go up higher, rather than trying to take the highest place for yourself and being cast down. And he says, everyone who exalts himself will be humbled. Everyone who humbles himself will be exalted. Now, we live in an age that's very much like influencer culture, where people are promoting themselves and their brand, and they're always hustling to do all of that. And that's very much the way people are making a living for themselves online and so forth. And it's easy to fall into. I mean, it's even easy to fall into that, you know, as apologists for Catholic Answers, we can start doing a lot of self-promotion and try to take that highest place and get top billing. Joseph gives a different way, where he takes the lowest place and then is told, friend, go up higher. It takes 1,400 years to be told that, but eventually he's put in this second highest place after Mary in terms of the papal magisterium. That's a huge kind of turnaround. And I think it really does speak volumes. Like, I think we're afraid to embrace that kind of humility today for fear that we're going to take the lowest place and be left there forever.
Right. I think that's right. I feel very, I hope everyone in the church is grateful for, whether you've observed it well or poorly, grateful to the Holy Spirit and to Pope Francis for promoting this year of St. Joseph. Nothing else. We got here, it meant a good conversation with you for this episode. But anything else you want to say about Joseph before we conclude the year of St. Joseph?
Well, yeah, maybe one thing. When we had like the whole worldwide fight against communism, one of the things the Pope did at the time, Pope Pius the 11th, I believe it was, Pope Pius the 11th in 1937, he placed the vast campaign of the Church against world communism under the standard of St. Joseph, her mighty protector. So to take this idea of Joseph as the protector of the Church and as protector of each member of the Church seriously, one concrete thing we can do is say, Joseph, here is the battle I find myself facing. And you're a protector. You're a guardian. You're someone who takes care of the weak and vulnerable. I'm feeling weak and vulnerable in this area. Come and help me. And be assured of his prayers. Be assured of his help, that he's not going to let that go unnoticed. On a personal note, my invitation to join Catholic Answers was on the feast of St. Joseph during the year of St. Joseph. And he's my name saint. So I feel very much like this is one area where he's interceded for me. I'd say there are going to be those areas in everyone's life if you allow them. If you open up that door and just ask for his help, he really will pull through.
Joe Heschmeyer, future St. Joseph.
Notably not the worker.
Yeah, but not right. Or the patron of the Universal Church. And I don't think you're going to get that title. I don't care how holy a life you live. Thanks for taking the time to talk with us about St. Joseph.
My pleasure.
Well, I feel a little bit less guilty now about my lack of fervent observation of the year of St. Joseph. I do love St. Joseph. It's hard to be Catholic and not love St. Joseph. I mean, I don't know any Catholic fathers who at some point haven't turned to St. Joseph and said, pray for me, St. Joseph. I know you are the model father, and I ain't. So, you know, we have St. Joseph. We love St. Joseph, but this year we got to honor St. Joseph with the year of St. Joseph, and it feels like maybe we didn't do as much as we could have. Well, we have this episode. We'll always have this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. If you've got something you'd like to share with us about a possible future episode, maybe something you've heard here that you would like to correct, or maybe just tell us we did a good job, you can always send us an email. focus@catholic.com is our email address. focus@catholic.com. Please support us as well financially if you can, as we come to the end of the year here, at the time when lots of folks are making decisions about their charity dollars. You can support Catholic Answers Focus and help us keep doing what we're doing and grow and expand. We got some big plans for the coming year just by going to givecatholic.com. Givecatholic.com. If you're watching on YouTube, well, you found our new YouTube channel. And don't forget to subscribe and hit the little bell icon. It does something. They tell me to say that. I don't know what it does, but there's a bell icon. Please hit it. And if you're listening on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, or any of the other places where you can get a podcast, like and subscribe there. Give us that 5-star review. Help us grow the podcast and get yourself notified when new episodes are available. Again, I'm Cy Killett, your host. Thanks for joining us. Sorry, St. Joseph, we didn't do that much this year. But I hope you like this episode. See you next time, God willing, right here, Catholic Answers Focus.